Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
At Stella Blue Coffee, we believe good coffee is one of life's non-negotiables. Stop drinking those boring, tasteless, big coffee beans and turn to Stella Blue. Remember, your mornings are sacred. It's time to start treating them that way. Not only are Stella Blue Coffee's premium beans sourced from the most coffee-rich geographies on Earth, but I approve of them, which is obviously more important. Stella Blue Coffee's delicious roasts are available in cold brew, pods, ground, and whole bean formats to seamlessly fit into your morning coffee routine. And every bag sold helps save dogs. Stella Blue Coffee, it's time to take back your mornings. Shop now at StellaBlueCoffee.com or Amazon.
Reveille, reveille, reveille. Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. We got a full slate. We actually had to have a long conversation before the show of which subjects we're going to keep in. So that means they're going to be a full last week because the Rolling Stone issued an article this week that we're going to talk about on Thursday. But today we have some big stories, some that even us following, like we follow the military news, I would say as close as probably 95% of the people on this planet. Like we get pretty locked in, but there's some stories and some revelations about what happened with the Bonhomme Richard and some other Fat Leonard, all kinds of things is dropping. So today we have four rounds in the magazine. Round number one, the news slipped us by last week, but we captured it for today. That big old chubby dude, huge Fat Leonard update because he got caught. He was on the lam for a little while, eating some lamb probably as well. And now he's back in NCIS custody. And NCIS, they got some fucking explaining to do. Like, this is a huge story. How do you let this guy out? We have all the details of what happened.
No offense to NCIS. We're shitting on hard today.
No, full offense. I think full offense.
Wait till round number two, my friend. NCIS is going to really take a beating in that one too. But people were asking us because the news of this Fat Leonard getting caught came out last week. And it came out like right before we recorded last week and somehow we missed it. And people were like, how could you miss Fat Leonard? How could you miss this? Well, guess what? Everybody missed Fat Leonard.
He snuck don't blame out. Us.
If the FBI can let him sneak away, we can miss him for a news update. Okay.
And listen, we only got so many topics that we can cover in a given day. We knew that Fat Leonard still be on trial. So we're going to talk about it today. Round number two, we previously said that the infamous USS Bonhomme Richard was reported to be an arson, but now it's looking more like the Navy is pinning blame on an innocent E-1 because they needed a scapegoat. There's a lot of things that are going on here. We're not saying this E-1 is completely innocent, but we're also not saying he's totally. You are?
After this, I am completely 100% certain that this kid is innocent.
And you know what, Kate? That's like, all genuinely. You need. That's all you need is the one. You need that's the me. One juror, and it could be Corporal Katie that's on there that's like, you know what? That thing deserved to fucking burn, honestly.
Sorry, maybe I'll ask this later, but I have a quick question. When they pick jurors for a military trial, do you have to be a certain rank?
It depends. So, like, if you are an 07 or above, you're going to have a jury of your peers. And in the military, that peer can be high level equivalent enlisted and officer. So like, let's say a major goes on for trial. You're going to have some majors. You're going to have some lieutenant colonels, but you're probably going to have some master sergeants and gunnies on there as well.
I love the idea of like an 05 getting court-martialed and he sits down and he looks at the jury and it's like 12 salty boot grunts that are like E2 and below.
And they're all still wearing their road guard vests.
They're smoking cigarettes in there. They're like, what do you do? Yeah, I love that idea. Let's
or
do
like,
that.
How about we stand at parade rest whenever I'm giving my fucking testimony there, you who? How about that? That would be incredible. Round number three, we got to update the safety brief. If you're in the hospital, don't get dog poop on your face, my friend. There's not often that I scroll news articles across the pond and come across something that I feel like our American listeners really need to know. One of those is when the queen dies. Two is when you get dog poop in your mouth. And finally, round number four, Cons is going to sit down with the four playboys because they got to meet President Bush. So he's going to talk about that experience. And we really need you to coach up, Trent. cons when you talk to him. This guy struggles with handshakes. I mean, apparently. I don't know if he needs to go through a class on like board procedures, because we could make Trent has the ability to be a board Marine, but what he is right now is far from that. And I think it's a confidence issue when it goes to shaking hands.
For those who don't know,
respects.
Trent went viral this weekend when he tried to shake the president's hand multiple times and
at the president's cup.
He kept missing. He kept missing at the president's cup. So we'll hear more on that. And if mission was accomplished or not, if he finally got that handshake or not.
Are you looking for relief, relaxation, or to party on the motherfucking moon? Then check out 3Chi's new True Strains lineup of cannabis vapes and gummies tailored for specific effects. And the best part? It's delivered straight to your door. Visit 3chi.com. That's 3chi.com. And for a limited time, get 20% off with the code BARSTOOL20.
My beloved Jaguars continue to dominate. Kate, we have a huge matchup this Sunday. Eagles, Jags.
I know. And I have to admit, I was watching the Jags game yesterday and I was feeling excited for you anytime they did anything good.
I was so
like,
pumped.
Oh, I bet he's so excited. I bet he's so excited.
I was like sitting on mega couch. Everybody else in my family had departed the greater living room area because they don't want to be around me when the Jags are playing. And especially if they're playing, well, I'd say, especially if they're playing poorly. But yesterday I was jumping up and down, 62-10 over the last 2 weeks, dominating. I've had such a great time.
And the birds have been crushing too. So watch out. You're going to have a bad weekend next weekend, my friend.
Mm-hmm. And I'll be hanging out with your baby's daddy and going to Ocean's Calling and all that stuff. Anyways, enough about me. Let's go into the show today because we have a lot to cover. First up, this story, doozy, Fat Leonard. And just so you know, we're going to be doing some fat shaming again.
Not me. I call him Husky Leonard. The rules lay, and this is comes to us from Stars and Stripes.
Always just Stripes now, over there. By the way.
Joe, just
huge
Stripes.
Rebranding.
Wait, really? I didn't know that.
It used to be Stars and Stripes. Now, if you Google that, it's probably going to lead you to some barbershop by base. But now it's Stripes. If you're looking for their publication, it's just Stripes.
Thank you. So the rules laid out in federal court were clear. Leonard Glenn Francis, the Malaysian defense contractor who admitted to bribing dozens of Navy officers as part of a $35 million fraud scheme, would remain in home confinement under tight 24/7 security while he provided evidence against corrupt Navy personnel. So house arrest, as long as he is going to sing like a bird and what do they call it? Snitch on these Navy officers, basically. Mm-hmm. Only approved visitors could enter the home. An ankle monitor would alert authorities should he somehow slip away. But he's not going anywhere, one of his defense attorneys, David Bernstein, assured the judge in 2020. Boy, hindsight. Talk about 2020. My goodness.
It should go from that defense attorney to the gif of Joe Bluth, where it's like, I've made a huge mistake.
Sorry,
Your Honor. I was wrong.
Yep. And people especially thought this because Fat Leonard, 6'2", 350 pounds. With butthole eyes, he did go somewhere. He cut off his ankle monitor this past Labor Day weekend and fled the San Diego mansion where he had been living with a private security staff that he paid for under a court-approved deal that meant to prevent his escape. So wait, let me get this right. He was not supposed to go anywhere, and he told the court, let me hire my own people to watch me, though. And they were like, okay, that's fine. All right.
Yeah, well, that checks out.
Yeah, that's essentially what happened. Yep.
Yeah. He was captured after 16 days on the run, caught Tuesday at an airport in Venezuela, where he was headed to Russia after earlier stops in Mexico and Cuba. Interpol's Venezuela Director General Carlos Garante Rondon said the 57-year-old Francis would be handed over to judicial authorities to begin paperwork for extradition.
Oh, I wish we had video of that. How much do you think he was trying to bribe him? I mean, because that guy's a bribe guy. If you're in Venezuela trying to go to Russia, you're pulling out every stop you got.
Oh, I feel like if you're a police somebody anywhere, you're hoping and you're like kind of sleazy. You're hoping Fat Leonard comes through your way. Like, what's in it for me? I'll let you go.
Probably Air Force Max.
Anything south of Mexico and you're in a country where that's coming to fruition, probably.
You know what I'm asking him for? Well, why is that cons? You know what I'm asking him for? Trampoline. Pontoon boat, $15,000. Anyways, Francis pled guilty in 2015 and became a cooperating witness.
$15,000?
Yeah, I don't want to push it. He spent a couple years in prison before a diagnosis of kidney cancer, and that's what led to his initial furlough in 2018 for medical treatment, then multiple extensions and court files.
I don't want to say you're fortunate to get a cancer diagnosis, but if you're going to be in federal custody, if you don't get it and you get the opportunity to go to a San Diego mansion for your prison time or for your jail time pre-trial, I feel like you got off pretty good. I mean, that's 5 years ago. He would have been in jail for 5 years waiting trial. And now he gets to hang out at a mansion. Pretty good deal if you can get it.
He basically takes full advantage of this cancer diagnosis and he hired servants. So now it gets him out of jail. He gets to be on home confinement. He hired servants to meet his family's every need and undermined the court's security requirements aimed at keeping him from fleeing.
Servants is an aggressive word by fucking that's, stripes, too.
Yeah. I mean, he hired servants.
Such a negative connotation.
Like, got a house cleaner and some landscaping. Like,
maybe they're
is
reporting
an
it.
Term.
Maybe they're reporting it off the way he referred to them or something.
Could
I don't
be,
know.
Yeah.
He probably did.
He undermined the court security requirements aimed at keeping him from fleeing by stationing his personal security guards in windowless garages with no night patrols and no visitors logs. So he told the court, don't worry, I'll take care of security. And then he put them in a dark room where they couldn't see him.
But honestly, you get what they deserve it. I mean, if the court allows you to do this and they're allowing you to take advantage, this is the judge's fault.
Yeah. He seemed able to anticipate when federal officers were coming to check on him and allowed a video crew to film him just days before he fled. So he was getting tipped off somewhere by someone, probably continuing to bribe. During his years on medical furlough, he stayed at three private homes. Most recently, his family and an English bulldog lived in a 5-bedroom, 7-bath with a $7,000 a month rent in a gated community. At his first stay outside a cell in an apartment near his doctor's office, he prepared his staff prepared so much food for him that uneaten meals filled 2 to 3 trash bags each day and would have to be dumped in a commercial dumpster.
That is kind of so much that. Food. I love that. That's a power move, though. I mean, if I lived a life of luxury, this is absolutely what I would be doing. I wouldn't be dumping it. I wouldn't be dumping it into the trash. But I've said a long time, if I ever came across Portnoy money and I was that level of rich, I would buy a huge swath of property and all these dogs that are in like kill shelters. I would have a ton. I would have all this food. I wouldn't put it in bags. I'd put it to the dogs. I would have everything that I wanted to eat my fill and then give it to my animals.
So you'd have like a golden trough where you'd put it at the end of the day.
I'm just telling you, I think you get to a point where you just can't eat. Like I was at a wedding on Saturday.
Oh, for sure.
The food, the food was like exquisite. Mm-hmm. And I ran into a problem because they kept bringing out more food that was like new. I hadn't gone through the whole rotation yet, apparently. And I was just so full. I was like, I can't even
like,
try
no more
that.
S'mores. No more s'mores.
I can't eat that. I got to the end of the night. They were at the after party. They're walking around with homemade ice cream sandwiches. And I was just like, I can't. I physically cannot consume any more food. So I don't know what Fat Leonard's doing. But
I just wish I could go back in time with the knowledge of where this dumpster was. And I'd be eating like a king for months.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My goodness. Anyway,
that's one thing that gives me comfort about you, Kate, is that I know deep down if the situation ever came up, you're going to eat. Like, I don't think, like, if it's a Whole Foods or whatever and there's a nice little baguette behind there, I don't think you thumb your nose at that baguette.
No, I think I don't say this poking fun at the homeless, but I think I'd probably thrive.
Yeah,
as if it ever comes to that, I think I'd find my way like a weasel around that world. Anyways, so he's making all this fancy food. He has all these chefs and servants. He has so much extra. He's dumping it in security bins or in trash bins. Then he has this live-in around-the-clock security guard who was getting paid $10,000 a month. And he got the security guard through one of the doctors treating Francis. So, I mean, I don't know where he's finding these people. He is kind of one of those crazy rich Asian kind of people, said his security guard. Yeah, and this security guard goes on to explain what Crazy Rich Asians was. We don't need to do that. A great movie. Guard hired as the successor at the apartment earned about $7,500 a month and worked 12-hour daylight shifts and never saw signs of overnight security. Galvin, the new security guard, said there was never anyone on duty when he arrived or left, and that he spent most of his time opening Amazon boxes. That's
love that.
So
he should have had a TikTok.
Oh my God, you should have done unboxings. Fat Leonard unboxing.
Fat Leonard unboxings would be, maybe I'll do that. And things that Fat Leonard had. We'll
I know Fat TikTok. Leonard, bad guy, but this next part, he's sort of all of us during the height of quarantine, I think.
And let's be honest, he seems fun as hell. Like
he
Fat
really
Leonard
does.
Seems like you're going to have a great Tuesday evening. You go over to his house. He's always got something cooking.
Yep. Galvin said, it's crazy how much stuff he ordered. He had packages coming from Amazon all day long. He had so much deliveries happening every single day. Sometimes it would be couches, furniture, books. Every morning I would show back up at the garage and there would be more boxes there.
That's nuts. What? It's like, once you have a couch, how many more couches do you need? You know, you have a couch for every room, and then you just like sit on it for a week. You're like, all right, time for a new couch.
I thought it was going to be like a talk boy. I thought it right. was going to be Nerf guns. We're buying couches and full out dressers just on a whim. This guy's got a problem.
Those are rich people fun purchases. I would love to be the person who got paid $7,500 a month to open someone, a rich person's packages. I would love
oh
that.
Yeah, sign me up.
In the days before he went on the lam, Francis paid for U-Haul trucks to carry all these new couches out of his home, and he brought in a film crew to interview him, according to Perla Nation, who said she met Francis through an attorney and worked during his final month of home confinement handling his admin tasks. Nation said she asked Francis about the film crew, but didn't get an explanation. It's just something I'm doing, she said, he said. Despite working in the home 2 to 3 days a week, she said she never met a security guard. She never saw a log of the visitors in the home. And she said U-Hauls were there to clear the house of belongings and his kids' belongings as they moved out ahead of his sentencing. He is a very smart man, and you are seeing the fallout now, she said, because even within those confines, he always had options. It's just absolutely crazy. They're working on his extradition right now. He was only 3 weeks shy of his sentencing date, supposed to be September 22nd when he fled.
And but he ain't getting out now. Like all that stuff, that judge is like, fool me once, motherfucker, you're not getting out now. Because a lot of times in a federal case, you'll have the conviction, and then in between the convictions and the sentencing, you'll have a time where a lot of judges will let somebody go get their affairs in order. They'll let them go say goodbye to their family. And then after sentencing, they have to go begin their sentence. This dude, you can't let him do that. He's already shown that he's going to, he's trying to go to fucking Russia.
Well, listen to this. When he cut his ankle monitor, an alarm goes immediately. Whoever was in charge of like watching him knew immediately that he had cut his ankle monitor. They didn't go check on his home for 6 hours. They were just like, he's probably just over
kind of think that is whenever you're dealing with probation, because I've been on probation for a long time. When you have probation, everybody thinks that the probation officer cares so much about you. It's kind of like when you work at a big company. Like Kate, I'm sure there's days when you don't do a blog and you're like, oh, I wonder if Dave's fucking pissed because I didn't do a blog today. Dave doesn't give a shit if you do a blog on a Tuesday or not.
Well, less he doesn't give a shit. He just doesn't know.
He doesn't know. And I think that's the same thing with a lot of probation officers and parole officers. They have so many people that they're keeping contract with and people that are breaking the terms of their probation all the time. You think that this guy does it, that everybody's going to swarm in on him. Reality is these probation officers are getting paid like 50 grand a year and don't give a fuck about what's going on.
On top of that, this admin assistant, this woman Nation, is saying it's mostly probably because he lulled them into a false sense of security.
Oh,
because
big time.
He pretty much, he was the model house arrest guy. He pretty much didn't go anywhere except for legal or medical appointments, like ever. She said, I think that's why the system became so lax around him. The security system met its ultimate test at about 7:30 a.m. on September 4th. It goes into the day he left and everything. He still owes the U.S. government. The U.S. government's like, don't worry, we're going to be more strict with him this time. And he still owes us $30 million, everyone. So don't worry, we're getting that $30 million back. But who knows how much they spent tracking him and finding him.
They definitely have lost money. I mean, they got bamboozled for $30-something million. In this case, I mean, dude, think about lawyer's fees, how much lawyers, a shitty lawyer, $100 an hour. I mean, that's a shitty lawyer, $100-$150 an hour.
I don't know
if that's super shitty.
No.
A lawyer and you're not making that money, I apologize.
Chaps.
Either way.
For context, like a good attorney's probably $500 to $700 an hour.
Yeah, I mean, not all of them obviously aren't going to be that price, but the government is paying a significant amount of attorneys to go through all this and has been since before 2018. We're talking 5 years of lawyers going through documents and all that. The amount of money that they probably spent on this case could exceed what he originally was defrauded the government for, realistically.
Yeah. The final note here is his admin person again saying like, as the sentencing day got closer and closer, he was getting more and more bummed out. She said he was getting deeply melancholy as the sentencing approached. And so she just thinks he thought, you know what? I'm really bummed out. I'm going to dip. I'm just going to get out of here. And because he does seem so fun, she said it made her sad to see him sad, even though he's a bad guy, because he's such a good time.
I feel like you're one of the people that worked there and he asked you to go to Russia with him. You probably go.
Oh, he could probably hoodwink the shit out of me. He could probably have me unknowingly commit a very obvious crime without realizing I was doing it, because I'm like, no, he wouldn't do that. He's so much fun.
Fat Leonard walks out in his big old mansion and his new camera crew comes in. He's like, all right, Frankie, what we're going to do today is buy some couches.
Yeah. One crime. Everybody knows the rules. So there you have it.
I kind of understand why he's going to Russia. I get it. But at the same time, two things. Number one, once you go to Russia, I feel like you might get stuck there. And then number two, there's got to be so many other countries that would be a better option for him before.
I don't think so, because you got to go to one that's definitely not an ally with us right now.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you defrauded the United States military. It's not like a civil suit.
And if you have enough money in Russia and you're just cool with Putin or whatever, then you're probably living a sweet life.
That's a good point.
I mean, shout out, not really a shout out, but Edward Snowden got his Russian citizenship today. Putin gave it to him.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Huge ZBT shout out to Edward Snowden. Long time. Wait a minute. No.
Yeah, cut that. Just the real part. First it was Katie China. Now it's Katie Russia.
Don't need that getting out there.
All right, let's move on to round number two.
This episode is brought to you by Body Armor Zero Sugar. The brand new zero sugar sports drink from our friends at Body Armor provides real hydration with no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes. And whether you're looking to stay hydrated or recovering from a long weekend, Body Armor Zero Sugar has got you covered with great tasting flavors like fruit punch and lemon lime. Available in stores nationwide, head on over to Body Armor Store on Amazon and get yours today.
What do we got for this one, Kate?
Okay, bear with me, everybody, because this was a crazy story. The last we reported on this huge ship, we'll get into it, fire. It was arson. It was determined arson by the Navy. And we were like, oh, my God, we were reading the clues and saying like, oh, my God, that's crazy. This
arson with a possible $1 billion price tag.
Yeah. And
this ain't like burning down a local KFC.
But huge twist in everything now, my friends. Tinfoil hat Katie is here to tell you. This enlisted fella is innocent, and I think you're going to feel the same.
Allegedly innocent. I don't know. Can we? Yeah. You could assume someone's innocent. You can't assume they're guilty.
No, I'm going to say it because there's a judge. Well, Kate says
innocent. I need to hear the facts first before I come to my conclusion.
Quick refresher. On the morning of July 12th, 2020, the first orange flickers of destruction took hold in the bowels of the hulking USS Bonhomme Richard as it was moored at the San Diego Naval Base. Unimpeded, the fire gathered force, conquering one level of the 844 tall ship, one floor at a time. Basically, next thing you know, the whole entire thing is on fire. The crew, you know how every Marine is a rifleman? Mm-hmm. When you're on board a Navy ship, you're a fireman too. Like, you're supposed to know how to do this shit. In every compartment of the ship, they're supposed to be trained on how to fight fire in their section of the ship. That's
volunteer
how this article,
or regular?
Just regular, just normal, okay? They're not driving their regular cars with a little
with
siren
their Calvin
on top
and Hobbes
of it.
Pissing on the back of them.
Yeah, no. But basically, everyone is supposed to be like every Marine or rifleman. If you're on board a ship, you're supposed to be part fireman too, if you need to be. They all fled, and the captain and sailors stood by as the ship burned. There had been no real attempt to put the fire out, especially as they realized none of the hoses near the fire worked, so you can't blame them. As they fled, none of the sailors shut the hatches behind them to contain the fire. It took over 10 minutes for an announcement to go across the ship about the fire. So maybe more people could have helped, but they had no idea. Mm-hmm. And even then, the person in control of the ship's anti-fire foam sprinklers, it took 10 minutes for them to even hear there was a fire. If they tried to activate them, it didn't work. The sprinklers, the records had been falsified saying they worked. They didn't. They were like, they knew they didn't work and they were just like, it's no big deal. Fuck it. It's fine. So they wouldn't have worked anyway. On the day of the fire, just 29 of the ship's 216 fire stations and only 15 of the 807 portable fire extinguishers were in working order.
That's crazy. Wow. I don't know. Maybe we talked about those stats when we initially talked about this story, but if we didn't, that's just crazy.
No, we did. We definitely did not. Cause that would that changes the, they didn't do anything.
Oh, it gets worse. Not until the San Diego Fire Department went on board did anyone spray water on the fire at all. And that was nearly two hours after it started.
Wait,
and by then it
now
was
I used to be the fire marshal. I have a question.
Okay.
Was the suspicion initially that it was a chemical fire? Because if they initially thought that it was a chemical fire or an electrical fire, they wouldn't be putting water on it.
Right. Yeah, you don't put those fires out with water.
So maybe that could be the reason why.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Right. This whole thing was a mess from the start. 2 hours after the fire starts, San Diego Fire Department gets on there. But right away, they're like, oh, shit, this is going to blow. As soon as they get off, it explodes. You could hear the blast 13 miles away. And that photo is infamous of this huge, massive Navy ship exploding, mm-hmm. docked in the San Diego Harbor. Before nightfall, the Bonhomme Richard was a $1.2 billion salvage heap. For the Navy, whose reputation had already been battered in the last couple of years because of collisions at sea and other embarrassing stuff, it was a massive blow. The service immediately launched two parallel investigations to what went wrong. And here's where it gets interesting. Here's the two separate investigations they launch at the same time. The good logical command investigation that's looking into the causes, and the bad evil NCIS investigation. Okay, get that in your head. Command investigation, good. NCIS investigation, bad. Okay.
Okay, but I will say, Kate, just from a juror standpoint, from me and Cons, if we're going to convict at the end of this, you're doing a little poisoning of the well there.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay. Hear me. Okay.
So, but we'll let that, we'll strike that from the record, and Cons and I will continue on.
Okay. The command investigation sent a team of investigators on a methodical examination of the fire, where they uncovered broken and missing fire hoses, poorly trained sailors, improperly stored hazardous material, and the shit was so messy that they basically concluded this shit was bound to happen. For example, 900,000 gallons of fuel had just been loaded on the ship, and none of the ship's leadership knew any of the emergency responses to fuel issues, if any of the fire stuff was working, or even if they understood them. They found that all the way up to the very top commander on the ship, they were all like, actually, we don't even understand the manual.
Like, this is a story where if somebody tells you it like in passing, like say some 10 years from now, you meet somebody that's on a Bonhomme Richard and they tell you this story, this account, you're like, shut the fuck. Like,
right. No.
I don't believe
you're telling me Navy captains don't know the emergency procedures for 900,000 gallons of fuel. Are you really telling me that?
Yep.
And yes.
So that's the command investigation is going through finding all sorts of reasons. The NCIS investigation was focusing on whether anyone was criminally responsible. And as the months passed, NCIS appeared to operate in isolation, discounting the damning findings of the command investigation so they could pursue a case of arson despite little to no evidence at all.
Oh, here we go.
6 weeks into both inquiries, the Navy told the command investigation to just accept at face value what the NCIS/ATF was working with them to. Investigations thought was the fire's origin. So the command investigation is saying, guys, there's like 80 million reasons why this fire started. And NCIS is just like, we don't care. It was totally somebody
and
who did it.
Honestly, just on its face from right now, you would have swore. Like if you would have done this and I didn't know that you did all the research on this, Kate, yeah. I'd have been like, she has this backwards. Like that it's the NCIS investigation that's accurate. And the command investigation was trying to cover up shit because the captain or the admiral didn't want to get in trouble. So they tried to do a cover up, not Maine, like headquarters Navy is the one that's doing it.
Well, command investigation, it's not the ship's command doing it. It's 77. Right. It's like 77
yes,
experts.
But that's like an internal, yeah. like still within the same.
Oh, both are Navy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm saying like, that's going to be a more localized command. Like you're not going to bring in somebody from Norfolk, Virginia to do this investigation in San Diego. It's still going yeah. to the overall hierarchy headquarters is the same.
And what Chaps is saying is that it could be likely that they're trying to look out for their buddies and make yeah. sure that they don't get, you know, hemmed up in all of this and looks like they were negligent when it might have been the case.
So basically, the command investigation traced the problem back to when the Bonhomme Richard docked in San Diego. It was for a long term 249 million mega renovation. So they weren't going anywhere for a long time. Sailors had moved off the ship and were just coming on during the day to work on it. And because things had gotten so lackadaisical with that, since it wasn't a full-time live-on ship, basically all ranks abandoned responsibility for the ship's safety. Like, nobody kept track of that shit anymore. They thought it was no big deal. We're home safe in this little dock. Like, nothing's gonna fucking happen.
And you can kind of see that, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Like if you're there and you're like, oh, this thing is here for a billion-dollar ship, $1.2 billion ship, is in a renovation for $250,000. So we're talking about 1/6 of this ship's total value in a repair less than 5 years after it made its initial launch. That's insane. So all these people are probably thinking, this thing's a fucking lemon anyway. It sucks.
So the NCIS investigation, however, laid the blame at the foot of a single young sailor who bore responsibility for this billion-dollar loss, 20-year-old seaman Ryan Mays. And for that, he might be facing life in prison. Why? He was called out as someone who didn't like the Navy. Mays was known as something as a loudmouth on the ship. His Navy contract guaranteed him a chance at BUDS. So BUDS is the really tough course you go through before you get to the Navy SEALs, like before you go through that school. So he was a Navy SEAL select. He just had to get through BUDS. But he quit on the fifth day. And again, he's only 20. He's young. He's kind of immature. He quits on the fifth day, and that left him without a Navy career path. And he was in limbo waiting for a new assignment.
So let me explain there a little bit what happens for the civilian listeners. So when you go to an initial school, like Kate went to MP school, her contract when she came into the Marine Corps had a 58 option, which is the military police option. So she could either go be corrections or she can go be an MP. Whenever you get there, you get to your MP school. It's after you go to boot camp, after you go to like a combat training if you're a Marine, and there's some other follow-on schools for the different schools too. But when you get to your MOS duty station, if you fail out or if you voluntarily withdraw, the Navy then or whatever branch has the ability to take your contract and to transfer it into any other job they want to. And sometimes that can take months to do. So you could be sitting in a schoolhouse. You could be sitting in just doing admin work, cleaning, doing whatever. This guy is in a position where he's just going around the ship essentially, and most likely just cleaning up bullshit that nobody else wants.
They made him a janitor on the ship essentially, right. Chaps. And he was so upset because he had wanted to be a Navy SEAL so bad. He was so upset that he went and stole a pair of headphones from the base store, thinking that they'll kick me out of the military and that's my out. To his surprise,
that's a good smart way to get out.
Well, no,
you're doing simple larceny, like, and you will get kicked out, but it's nothing that you're going to go to jail for.
Well, to his surprise, he was only reprimanded, and the commander encouraged him: embrace your potential and your time in the Navy. And this restoked his desire to become a SEAL. So you get three chances. The Navy gave sailors three chances. So when he was sent to the Bonhomme Richard in March 2020, he said, this is Mays was giving the interview. This is with ProPublica himself. He was like, he was single-minded. And others accounted, he would stand on the flight deck, and on a clear day, he would stare across at Coronado where the SEALs train. And that's where he wanted to be, in a special warfare program. But despite his newfound enthusiasm, records and interviews showed that NCIS and ATF agents zeroed in on Mays' discontent and the fact that he dropped out of SEAL training. So they're not looking at anything he had done since then, that he was motivated again. They're looking, he stole a pair of headphones and he was upset at being stuck in this limbo.
And you know what really pisses me off about that? Is that you're going to have, as leaders, you're going to have this type of troop who fucks up at the beginning, maybe doesn't meet expectations, but then kind of recalibrates. He meets some good leaders and they're like, you can do this. Make sure that you go after your goals and dreams. Has great leadership in place and they're teaching him to go chase after your dreams. Do this. You could do it. And then they're like, oh, actually, he said he fucking hated the Navy once on Twitter. So maybe we should stick him with a $1.2 billion loss.
We're dealing with kids, okay? You know, yeah, technically they're an adult, but they're a kid, right? You're 18, 19, 20 years old, fresh out of high school. Maybe the first time in your life you had any sort of real responsibility. And it's very common that they don't necessarily make the best decisions. So I can understand where he might change his tune a little bit.
And two, like, there was proof he had been seeking recommendations to get back into SEAL school. He had been doing super tough workouts. There was proof that, like, he didn't want to get out of the Navy now. Like, he was motivated again. He was feeling good. But still, the Navy continued its pursuit of Mays, even as a military judge recommended against it, bluntly saying, there's no evidence to go after this guy. Like, even a judge was like, this is crazy. There's no evidence at all. Especially, they cited the findings of the command investigation, the good investigation, saying, look at this stuff. It's not this kid. And now, starting this week, he's being court-martialed in a military trial in San Diego, for aggravated arson and willfully hazarding a vessel. In court, the Navy has tried to stop questions about the command investigation and dangerous conditions aboard the ship. And they asked a judge to forbid Mays's counsel from presenting conclusions of the command investigation, which is fucking insane. Like, it looks like they're basically trying to hide that this kid is a scapegoat, right? Like,
right.
That's insane. On the day of the fire, the area where it began was packed with 2 fueled forklifts, a man lift, pallets of hand sanitizer, lithium batteries, and other combustibles, wood beams, scaffolding, rope, cardboard crates, some stacked super high. Sailors who had begun moving back on the ship because the renovations were almost done said there were improperly stored oil drums, gas cylinders, and other combustible items everywhere. And just days before the fire, Mays himself had angrily texted his division officer saying contractors were doing work that was, in his own words, hazardous as fuck. A worker was welding near his bunk and he was burned by a stray spark. So people on board the ship are like, all this dangerous flammable shit's everywhere. And contractors are welding, spraying fire sparks everywhere. That didn't matter. All this evidence didn't matter to NCIS investigation and the ATF who was working with them, who scooped up Mays, surprising him. And this is after the fire. They surprised him and checked when he checked in for work. This ATF agent Beal started questioning him, where more than 150 times Mays was like, I didn't start this fire. Beal said, just admit what you've done. And Mays said, you're a liar. You're a liar, Beal said. So they're trying to tell him, just say you did it. And he's like, no, I didn't do this. Finally, they leave him empty in the room where they hear him muttering, I didn't do it. Let me go. He puts his head on the table and starts sobbing. When Mays learned close to midnight, he was going to the brig. He said something like, I'm guilty. I guess I did it, I guess, which it was clearly said in a really sarcastic tone. A
confession under distress. Like that's, and it's the embodiment of that.
Yeah. It sounded like they coerced this out of him.
Yeah.
Mays said he was being sarcastic. They said, no, you're not. And he was booked in the brig August 20 of 2020. After a days long probable cause hearing for Mays in December 2021, the judge, Captain Angela Tang, said she was not persuaded of Mays's guilt in explaining her recommendation to drop the charges. So this judge, who, by the way, I cut the part out about her, everything she's done. She's like brilliant and super
respected,
super detail oriented, like goes through everything with a fine tooth comb. She was saying basically like, it's crazy. She repeatedly refers to if the fire was arson. She won't even allow them to say it was arson because she's like, I don't even think we could point at him or anyone that it's arson.
And that's important because if you can't explain and you can't prove the element of the crime, you cannot prove somebody's intent, their criminal intent and their criminal action, if you can't even prove that the cause was a crime.
Oh, yeah. Her report notes that the defense expert witness testified about finding two other causes: lithium batteries that had leaked and exploded, and arcing from an engine wire on a forklift. There was so much shit in this area that, like, it was a ticking time bomb, basically. Given that evidence, the experts testified the only reasonable conclusion was undetermined. And that was from both sides, like experts. The NCIS ended up getting rid of an expert on their side who was like, actually, this was like a time bomb. She goes on about the failures of the case and makes it crystal clear that she does not believe Mays did it for legit reasons. And still, Vice Admiral Stephen Kohler, the military commander with the final say about whether to prosecute Mays, disregarded her recommendation. And in February, it said, we're sending Mays to court martial.
And how, even though the qualifications for a conviction in a court martial versus a civilian court are different. And honestly, it's harder in a civilian court than it is even, or in a military court than it is a civilian court. How can you possibly say that it's beyond a reasonable doubt if the judge that is tasked with questioning it has reasonable doubts of her own?
Yeah.
Like how could you say that to a jury who doesn't have really any real knowledge of the law like a judge would? How, if she says that this isn't arson or you can't prove it's arson, how do you even let this go forward?
And a part that I cut out of this is other sailors actually said, we saw another sailor who wasn't him running out of the ship about 20 minutes after a sailor who had a troubled past. They found grainy security footage, what appeared to be this other sailor running out about 20 minutes after everyone else. And then he has since been kicked out of the Navy. Like hush, hush, like, and there was writing in a port-a-john saying, I was the one who lit the Bonaventure on fire. They did a handwriting check and it matched the other sailor's handwriting. And then he got kicked out of the Navy quietly. So like, I'm leaving that part out. There's so much to this case that is insane.
Which if you're a sailor and you're thinking about writing that on the porta potty, don't do it.
We advise
that's
against
a simple
that.
No, like don't do that. No confessions on a porta potty.
As for Mays, I'm getting to the end of it now. He says his experience, especially his time in the brig, has been soul crushing. A piece of me died in there and I don't know if I'll ever get it back. And again,
I mean, think if he is telling the truth and if this reporting is actually true of the things that's going on, if you're sitting in a military brig and they're the United States government is charging you with $1.2 billion worth of arson. Dude, I mean,
they're seeking life in prison.
Overwhelming
is life in prison.
An understatement. Right.
That's his entire life. This kid's entire life. And again, I look at this evidence of all these other sailors on ship are like, oh, he was doing crazy hard workouts. He was always talking about I'm going for the SEALs again. He was asking higher up sailors for recommendations. Like, this wasn't a kid who wanted to end his Navy career. Like, clearly, what are you talking about?
And you know what it really reminds me of? And the last thing that I'll say about this,
yeah,
it really does. We talk about Fuga men all the time. It reminds me of PFC Santiago. Like,
yeah,
he hates the Navy so much that he's working out and he's trying to go into EOD or another special forces, a special type of job. He wants to do all those things. And he wants to get out. It's the same thing as Santiago that had all of his wall locker in place and all of his uniforms spread out. And he hadn't even simply called his aunt. Now, I'm not an expert on phone calls and foot lockers, but it seems to me there's a much larger problem than 1E3 on the U.S. Bonham Richard.
I don't think you can handle the truth, chaps.
I don't think so.
What's scary about all of this now that I've heard all of this evidence? I think sometimes higher leadership, you might get one individual whose morality isn't completely in check, and they're willing to just bombard and take advantage of a lower enlisted individual like this. But the fact that there would be multiple people who would have to be okay with essentially destroying somebody's life really doesn't
and not
sit
use
well
loosely.
With me.
That's legit. No. Destroy. End it, essentially.
Yeah, end it. You're going to give this kid life in prison
end
for
it,
something.
Because you left out some gas cans.
Yeah. And right, I left out, right. I cut out his account of that day. Like, he was extremely truthful. He's like, yes, I was disgruntled a bunch of the time, but like, I was just cleaning the ship that day. And quite honestly, I was dicking around on my phone when shit started going down. Like, I was in the back of the ship somewhere, like tooling around.
So this last paragraph, I think this is very telling. It says more than 20 people, including three admirals, were disciplined. Okay. Discipline to me doesn't sound like life in prison or career ending. Sure.
Yeah, can't stand that. What is discipline? You're exactly right. Another captain that's on there, and we're talking 06 captains for the Army and Air Force and Marine types that are listening. We're talking 06 captain getting a letter of reprimand. Like, can't no. So you're not going to be a rear admiral lower half whenever you get out, but you're still going to be a captain. This man is facing fucking life in a federal prison for $1.2 billion worth of destruction.
And it's like, because
that's a big difference.
It's because the bigwigs at the top are like, we don't give a fuck who it is. Find a head to roll. We need a head.
And
to
that
roll
happens
this.
All the
and
time. Somebody's always got to be responsible.
Enlisted, it's easier to let some E2, E3 take the heat. And we talk about that all the time on the show, how it's a slap on the wrist for the higher ups for the same shit that
that's a good point. That's a good point. There are a lot of things, discipline, where if you're a little bit of a higher rank, you can probably get past that. Whereas if you know, the lower you go on the totem pole, it's not as easy to overcome. And certainly it's not easy, or it's nearly impossible to overcome life in prison.
A colonel does not have an automatic demotion when you get a DUI.
Right.
A PFC does. That's insane.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was saying. Exactly.
The colonel should know better than the PFC, and the punishment should be harsher. Like, the harder rank, the higher rank you are, you have more responsibility. You have more trusted in you. You need to perform better. Like, the way that we do awards and the way that we do punishment will never make sense. If the ranks at the awards that you get are because you did things outside of your rank and responsibility level, why do you get a letter of appreciation when you're a PFC? Like, if you're doing something good at a PFC, maybe you should get a higher award because you did things that you weren't expected to do. Either way, with this story, obviously the government is going to have their side too. If you're a prosecutor for the government, or if you work for the government and you're like, you guys fucking missed it, this article is fucked up, reach out to us. We want to know more. We are more than willing to hear both sides. And if we misrepresented it here, reach out to us. If you have more information that's not as damning as this, or is more damning than this, send it. And we'll fucking talk about that too.
I'm Team Mays. I say he's innocent, and I think it's a big.
All right, Cons, just based off of Kate's presentation, let's have Kate be the closing arguments as the defense attorney for this young sailor. Are you voting to convict or to acquit? And we'll ask you too, Nick, just as a civilian on the panel too. So, Cons, first up, we going to convict or are we going to acquit?
I got to hear the other investigation. So right now I'm going to acquit. I can't convict on what I've been heard the last few years, and especially with this new evidence that's come out. I cannot convict on that alone.
That's fair. Nick?
Can't convict. I watched 12 Angry Men before. Just don't feel comfortable doing it at this time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would say that there's definitely not a preponderance of evidence to point to a guilty verdict. I'm going to vote to acquit, too. So I think that that's a clean sweep 4-0 for ZBT on the jury here. We must acquit. So let him out. All right, let's move on to round number three. What do we?
No joke, I think I might have a Cane's sauce problem. I was at Raising Cane's the other day getting my box combo with extra sauce on the side like usual. I have an order. When I eat my Cane's, it goes crinkle cut fries, chicken fingers, the Texas toast, and finish strong with the slaw. So I start eating, and before I know it, I'm scraping the bottom of my sauce, and I wasn't even done with my fries yet. This habit is escalating, and I'm 100% here for it. Dip into Cane's. Get extra sauce for me, please.
We have here, Kate, this is going to be a lot more
this
fun.
Round, this is just one of those wacky UK.
This is a palate cleanser.
Update the safety brief. If you're in the hospital, don't let a dog poop on your face.
True.
This comes to us from Wales Online. Go Wrexham. If anybody's been watching that on Apple TV. A woman spent 3 days in hospital after her daughter's dog accidentally did a poo on her face while she was asleep.
Also, can we pause right there? How do you feel? Thumbs up, thumbs down real quick on how British people will say we're in hospital, not in the hospital. They remove the preposition. How do we feel about
woman
it? Thumbs
spent
up or
three
thumbs
days
down?
In hospital. I like it. I like
sounds
it.
Sounds fancy. I'm in on it. Sounds fancy.
Yeah, I wanted to go down, but I'm up. It does sound fancy as fuck.
When I was pregnant, I used to watch this UK. It was a birth show. It was like that, the Learning Channel, My Birth Story or whatever, but it was like, it was like in a sweep your chimney, governor kind of hospital where women were like, I'm going to shoot me beans all over the table. I am.
Me
like,
water break.
Yeah, my joint is tearing in two. And I like could not get enough of it. So I love it.
About to be split like an oak log.
Yes, exactly. That's the kind of vibe. So I like all that. Anyway, Amanda Gamo, 51, was taking an afternoon nap with her Chihuahua Belle when the pooch became ill and had violent diarrhea. Unfortunately, the mom of three was asleep with her mouth open. And Belle's asshole was right next to her face when it got diarrhea on her mouth. She ran to the bathroom.
Wait, no. We can't skip over these Britishisms because there's a bunch in this article that we need to address. First up, the spelling of diarrhea is absolutely diabolical. We're dealing with diarrhea with the phonetic alphabet. Delta, India, Alpha, Romeo, Romeo, Hotel, Oscar, Echo, Alpha. Just doesn't
diarrhea.
Seem right.
That's
not how we do it.
That's a tough word to spell. Even without the British spelling. So that's definitely taken me for a
I don't like the oh diarrhea. Yeah, I don't like that at all. And then secondly, the second one, what is top and tailing with Belle? What does that mean? The mom of three was asleep and top and tailing with Belle?
It was butt to mouth. Top and tailing is butt to mouth.
Oh,
yeah, they were sleeping opposite. Yeah.
Just a nice way to say it. Yeah.
She ran to the bathroom to be sick, but later ended up in hospital with a gastrointestinal infection passed on from the pooch. Oh, so wait, she wasn't in the, I was like, she was in the hospital sick when the dog shit in her mouth.
She was at home.
She was at home when the dog shit in her mouth. Pardon me. Amanda said, I was having an afternoon nap with Belle like I always do when I suddenly felt something squirt in my mouth. I rushed to the bathroom and my shum was in the shower. It was disgusting. I was hurling violently. I couldn't get the taste out of my mouth. Amanda's daughter took Belle to the vet where the pooch was diagnosed with a nasty stomach bug.
Wait. There's another incident that happened.
I need this explained.
So in this article, Kate didn't put it in here, but in this article from Wales Online, you can see the woman has dog shit diarrhea on her face and she stops before she wipes it off.
Yes.
It looks like a puddle on her mouth.
Yeah.
In the article.
You didn't read that.
I'm an incredibly online person. I would never get shit on my mouth and stop to take a photo first. Yes, you know what I mean? Yeah.
But I wish I think if that happened to me because of the nature of our job, if I wiped it off without the pick, I would instantly regret it. I wish that I would have the pick.
Yeah.
Because that's viral city. Well, a Barstool content creator gets a diarrhea on the mouth. Buddy, that's going viral.
Well, guess what? Later in the day, Amanda starts getting the same symptoms as the Chihuahua Belle. So now she's pooping all over everyone's mouths. Paramedics prescribed her painkillers for her stomach cramps, said drink lots of water, but it got worse. It was cramps all over her body. She then rung 999. Big time UK, not 911. What's going on here? This time she had to go to the Bristol Royal Infirmary and was hooked up to a drip. She had a gastrointestinal infection passed through Belle's feces into her mouth days earlier. Mm-hmm. That's something you don't, when the doctor's like, what happened? I would just be like, I guess I'm just sick. I wouldn't be like, dog shit in my mouth.
No, I think you got to, because what if, see, this is what I was thinking about this earlier. This kind of thing happens. Belle does, she does tops and tails. She does puppy 69 in every fucking day. It's what she lives for. What Dr. I imagine Talon. Is this woman took her lovely little Belle on a stroll through the English countryside, possibly past a cottage of some sort. I don't know. Maybe there was some sort of pastry sitting on the windowsill cooling. Well, whenever they did it, they hopped through it. They hopped through a nice little spring and Belle went in there. Little did she know about a zoonotic disease called leishmaniasis. Mm-hmm. And whenever she got leishmaniasis, she didn't realize that Belle was going to take a 6-hour incubation period in order that to start to happen. So they do all their things. She feeds her, gives her a gut full of food. Next thing you know, she's shitting on her fucking face and she's walking around a cottage when she should be having a lovely cheese and meat spread. And the next thing you know, she's got leishmaniasis.
Mm-hmm. Can humans get that?
Oh, yeah.
Apparently.
Did dog handlers ever get sick from dog poop?
No, it's one of the things that we talk about a lot, like listeria and leishmaniasis, all kinds of different zoonotic diseases that are able to transfer from the dog to the person.
Can humans get worms like a dog?
Buddy, yes.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. You can have so many worms swimming out your anus, you think you want to go fishing. Like, there's all kinds of things.
Chaps, bottom line, how do you protect yourself from getting all these various diseases that you just described from a dog?
Well, Don't go top to tail.
Top to tail is very problematic. We're going top to top or tail to tail. We don't ever do top to tail. Right. Everybody knows that. That's fucking rule number one. Yep. Rule number two, you need to be constantly cognizant and looking around and have situational awareness when you come across a stream or a creek. Does that stream move? If the answer is no, your dog doesn't move through it. If it is a moving stream, the likelihood of any bacteria or viral illness in there is going to be very small because it's going to go downstream with it.
I see all the time. I still follow all this because my baby dad's from Austin, Texas area. And I still follow all these hiking trails and stuff there. And they always put out alerts. They're like, alert, like the water's dirty this week. Like dogs are dying. Stop letting your dogs play in this water.
Listeria is a huge one.
I didn't realize. From like,
water-based distemper. There's a lot of illnesses that you can get.
So just walking in it, not even like, I would think like, okay, walking if they drink it, that's not good. Just even walking in it, it's not good.
Yeah. And I feel bad. Honest to God, I feel bad for you people that were born up north because this is something that everybody in the South knows, you know, to put on shoes, because if you're walking through the gutter and there's water in there, you're going to get worms. Like, we just know it. Living in the South, you got to have it on there. I mean, I was super nervous. All the recon dudes, when I was in Fallujah, because we would have to go over canals. They had big canal systems in place, and some of those were very stagnant at times. But you had to go where you have to go, like mission accomplishment, troop welfare, to include dogs. So whenever we would go over, the next couple of days, I would have to do way more medical checks on Saika to make sure that that didn't happen to him. So I, like, you have a recon dude coming in, and I'd have Saika by the base of his little nub tail, because remember his tail? He spun so much that he had to get it cut off right before we went to Iraq. So his little nub tail, I'd have to grab it, yank it straight up in the air, and look, like, inspect his butthole and, like, kind of spread it to the side. Like, you see how I'm using my fingers? Yep. Like, you spread your fingers to the side to see if there's anything coming out of his butthole. It's a dangerous proposition. This lady just got a face full of it. That's all that happens. It happens to puppy all the time, but not end up with diarrhea in your face simply because why, Kate?
You can't go top to tail.
You can't go top to tail.
She went top to tail.
Right. But you can't go to safe rounds and alibis, which we're going
to
do.
Or
right
or we could go to the chat in round four.
Could do that. Today's show is also brought to you by our good friends at Roman. Roman swipes are a convenient over-the-counter wipe that are a clinically proven way to help you last longer in bed, which everybody likes to do. They are uniquely formulated to reduce overstimulation without eliminating sensation altogether. And in a 2019 study, they are proven to increase time to orgasm by more than 4 times. So, folks, if you're normally a 4-stroke cum kind of guy, now we're talking 20 strokes. I don't think people realize how much 4 times longer is. If you're normally having sex for 30 seconds, buddy, we're going 2 minutes. Normal 2 minutes, we might be going to 8. We're just going up and up and up, and we're going to fucking come hard. That's the way that it rolls. Try swipes today with a special offer just for our listeners. Get 20% off your first order at GetRoman.com/ZBT today. That's GetRoman.com/ZBT for 20% off. What a great deal. Everybody likes to come. Just edge yourself a little first, my friends. Fantastic. GetRoman.com/ZBT.
I'm joining us now, former political correspondent, and now esteemed host of the Foreplay podcast presented by Barstool Sports. We have Riggs. Riggs, how we doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Captain Kanza. I miss you. I'm bummed that I missed you at Whiskey Creek when you made your Barstool Classic appearance this year. My flight got canceled, but I'm here. It's been, how long has it been since I appeared on Zero Blog 30, I think?
Longer than I care to mention, because I also don't know, but it's, you know, it's good to have you back. It's like you never left. And you know, the reason we're having you join is because this past weekend we had the President's Cup. And if you've been in a hole and you don't know what that is, that's a golf competition between the Americans and the international team. And as in years past, former presidents were in attendance. And sure enough, this year, President Bush and President Clinton were there. And you basically became best friends with President Bush. So can you just tell me what happened?
Yeah, I mean, look, I've obviously been the political correspondent on Zero Blog 30. I used to write about politics for, God, the first year and a half, 2 years of my job at Barstool. That's how I got hired originally, early 2016, the election, the whole deal going on. So I've always been into presidents. I've always been into elections. I think you and I have talked about this quite a bit, Cons, but I find elections to just be – elections are incredibly fascinating to me. Just
absolutely.
The fact that you have two, like, accomplished grown adults just trying to – ruin the lives of other accomplished grown adults and prove that they're better than they are is such a phenomenal theater that plays out on a national scale and stage. So yeah, I've always been super into it. And, you know, I said on Foreplay on our show that we put out today that, like, for me, when I was, you know, I was about 13, 14 years old when 9/11 happened, which is about like my earliest kind of memories as a person, when you still kind of, when you just remember things. I remember things in school. I remember like the global political, geopolitical climate at the time. I obviously remember like 9/11 and the weeks afterwards. And obviously President Bush was an enormous part of that. It was early in his presidency. So for the next 7, 8 years, like he was my, you know, president when I went from 13 or 14 years old to, you know, 22 years old or whatever. So, so yeah, he was just a big part of kind of like my still developmental stages as a teenager of like learning about the world and geopolitics and everything. And so for him to then be standing right there in front of me, it was wild. I know that, you know, you as a captain, you've definitely shaken some president's hands, I would assume, there, Captain.
Yeah, I've actually, I mean, President Bush was the speaker at my graduation, and I invited him to my graduation party, to which he politely said he might be able to come. He ended up not coming, unfortunately. I also invited him to my wedding this past year. Again, busy guy, couldn't make it. I don't know. Maybe if I have like a really big 40th, I'll invite him to that.
How'd you invite him? What was the platform on which you invited him?
I sent him an invite through the mail. There's an address that you can send things to. And I had sent him a letter before and gotten correspondence back from his team. So it was a good address. And if you're ever interested in sending him a note or something, you'll get something in return. He's a great man like that, has a great team working for him. So, but what's interesting to me, and obviously you guys at Foreplay have built up such a brand that you get a lot of access to these golf tournaments. But what's crazy is that you were able to get so close to a president and get past all of the Secret Service, and he was just kind of meandering around the President's Cup. So can you kind of tell me how it came to be that you were, you know, a foot from him and then chatting with him?
Yeah, it was really bizarre scene, to be honest with you, because like you mentioned, like at the President's Cup, it's pretty known that former presidents of the United States and the sitting president of the United States has been known to show up before. Presidents have a long history of being golf guys. All of the current living presidents are golf guys and have kind of they dip their toes in the golf world. And so, you know, they've shown up to the President's Cup. There's great pictures from 2017 at Liberty National where you had Clinton, Bush, and Obama all out there together taking pictures and laughing it up. And so, you know, here kind of on Friday, they have a tunnel, right? So a tunnel kind of goes out to the first tee and the stadium around the first tee, kind of a horseshoe, and then the tunnel underneath sends everybody out to the first tee from the practice green. And our credentials got us basically into that tunnel area, but like whether we could actually go on to the first tee, I don't think so, but it wasn't clear. And you're sort of like, you fake it till you make it in these scenarios. Yeah. Like if you've got a credential and people aren't stopping you and you just kind of say hi and chit chat and they keep letting you go through, like as long as you don't do something disruptive, nobody's really going to notice. It's chaos. Mm-hmm.
You just act as though you're supposed to be there. Right. And then people are just like, oh, he's supposed to be there.
And we do have media credentials and I have like an inside the ropes pass. So it looks really official when it is. And we might've been allowed to be there. Who knows? You just kind of get through it. And then, you know, definitely not allowed to be probably right on the first tee, right next to President Bush and President Clinton while they're just chit chatting with Jay Monahan, who's the commissioner of the tour and all kinds of other big names. It also helped like the Charlotte police who were awesome. There were a handful of them that were working that area that were big fans. And they were like, hey boys, great to see you guys out here. If you need anything, let us know. And we were like, thank you guys for everything you're doing and chit chatting them up a lot. Then we're kind of like, yeah, I'm going to meander this way. And next thing you know, I'm kind of standing in that tunnel and President Clinton is right behind me, which I didn't know. I walked through this tunnel. I get to the end of it. President Clinton with his whole Secret Service is right behind me. And I kind of just step off to the side and I let things happen. And I was like, man, I think this next group tees off, I'm just going to go for it. I just wasn't doing anything. I was kind of chit-chatting. I was just kind of, you know, chatting it up, hanging like I was supposed to be there. And then eventually after the next group tees off, and I'd been in the corner for 20 minutes or so, President Bush is standing right in front of me, facing me directly, probably 5 feet in front of me. There's no one else really within like 10 feet of us, but he's like scanning the crowd up top. Mm-hmm. And he's like chirping with the crowd. One person's like, W, side my hat. He's like, no. And the whole crowd would go crazy. And he's just kind of quipping back and forth with people. And then next thing I know, you know, he's like, one person's like, W, your first pitch, you know, after 9/11 was the biggest rocket I've ever mm-hmm. seen. And he's like, that was a bullet, wasn't it, boys? And everybody's like going crazy. So it's like, he's just like working the crowd, you know?
He's good at it.
Everybody's laughing. And then, like I said, next thing I know, he's standing 5 feet in front of me. He stops scanning and he kind of just looks right at me. And I was standing there not expecting this, just like one hand in my pocket, sort of trying not to be a problem, but I'm like, this is my moment. So I just put my hand out and he put his hand out, shake his hand. And I just said, Mr. President, you know, my name's Sam Bazoyan. I work with Barstool Sports. And he just goes, all right, Sam. and then we just chatted for probably, you know, 30 seconds or 20 seconds or however long it was, just about God knows what. We're chit-chatting about the golf and then like for the next 20 or 30 minutes while the following couple groups teed off, there's five groups that teed off that day. You know, he was just in that corner and I was just kind of part of his orbit. Like he would randomly kind of say something like my direction and I would quit back. And then the other people that were around me would quit back. It was like, it was almost like we were just kind of part of all like a dinner party, basically just like chit chatting it up for mm-hmm. 30 or 40 minutes. And it was incredible. I was shaking. I was very much like afterwards, like, oh my God, that was just, you know, I mean, that person, no matter what your politics are, that person was voted by, you know, tens of millions of his peers to be the most powerful person in the world. And then for 8 years, he was the most powerful person in the world. It made all kinds of incredible decisions and, you know, had to deal with, you know, the decisions that literally affect hundreds of thousands or hundreds of millions of people's lives. Most likely like billions of people's lives and had to do incredibly hard things and, you know, calling the families of fallen, you know, military service members. And like that guy's just had to do the thing that is the most impressive thing and the hardest job in the world. And like, here he is standing right in front of me talking to me for 30 seconds. So it was very much like trying not to think about that was crazy.
Right. And I mean, and you've met some very famous athletes. You've obviously interacted with Tiger Woods, but I think that it's just on a different level with him. And for him to be the president during what will probably go down as the most significant event in our lifetimes, the fact that you had that concert, that ability to chat with him, I think, again, and Frankie said on your show this morning, I was listening, you put the politics aside and you take the person for who they are and the position that they held. And that's just cool. At the end of the day, that's cool because not everyone gets a chance to meet the president of the United States.
Totally. And 100%. And it's, you know, it's country, right? It's democracy. It's respecting the office. And that person right there is standing there before you as like, he's the guy. He's one of only 46 guys in history that have held that job in the history of planet Earth and held that office and been that person. So him being, standing right there, it was something. It was nerve-wracking. Yeah. You didn't want to like mess up. You know, attention is just focused that way. There's nothing like presidential aura, and there's nothing like the post-presidency life. I mean, those guys.
It's such a great gig.
They're up there. Everybody loves them, right? Like the partisanship, I guess, is like is significantly decreased to what mm-hmm. it was from the last day of their term to now. You know, yes, it's still out there. You still get it on some of the comments of like, now I'm by transfer, me and Trent were just laughing about this. Like, now he, by shaking the President Bush's hand, it's like, I'm now responsible for war crimes and like people's
yeah,
opinion.
You're right,
like,
right.
Nah, I mean, that was one of our presidents of the United States. Like, you're damn right, I'm going to shake that motherfucker's hand and say thank
absolutely.
You for your service. Like,
absolutely.
So it was super cool. And then my man Trent, who just had one of the all-time,
I was just going to say,
all-time moments, where he heroically agreed to be the camera guy for Frankie. Frankie was like, I'm going to take off my hat. I'm going to shake President Bush's hand and get a picture with him. And Trent's like, give me that phone. I'll do it. I'll be the guy. Mm-hmm. And then kind of realizes as he's doing it, which he explained on our show too, that he couldn't really explain on Twitter, but there is a feature on your phone. So anybody who hasn't seen this video, has got millions of views now. Trent goes to film Frankie, and then it kind of like, as he's finishing up his moment, Frankie's moment with George W. Bush, you know, Trent goes in for the handshake and then like doesn't, and then has to pull back and then pulls back again. And then the third time, right as President Bush walking away, he's able to get the handshake in. He didn't realize that Trent was really filming a video the whole time. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. while you're filming a video, you can hit a picture button and you can just take a photo during the video. Trent had done so, he just like takes the picture, and boy oh boy, it just probably a top two video in the history of foreplay, right up there with our talk when he asked Trent where he's stationed. But mm-hmm. but yeah, we just had some unbelievable moments with President Bush.
Yeah, I said credit to Trent. He kept his cool the entire time, took the picture, but the fact that it was first person and you just see this floating hand attempting to shake President Bush's hand and getting rebuffed twice, credit to him for putting it out there for the third time and getting it done finally.
Too good Couldn't happen to anybody a better guy. Trent's the perfect guy for that. I'm glad he got his handshake. The three of us have now shaken the hand of President Bush. It's pretty crazy. Pretty cool.
Yeah. No, very, very cool. And I think of all the former presidents, well, there's only a few now that are still alive. He seems like the most down to earth and easy to converse with. And especially given, your account with him and everybody else's account with him, and that would echo that sentiment. So very cool for you guys. Very cool for the show. If you want to hear it a little more in detail from Trent and Frankie, go check out Foreplay, wherever you can download podcasts. I will say, I'm biased. Of all the other podcasts besides Zero Block 30, Foreplay is my favorite show. So I appreciate what you guys are doing. And
very nice, Captain. That's very nice of you to say that. I appreciate it. I miss you guys. I hope you guys are still, keeping it real for the people out there.
Absolutely. Always, always. All right. I'll let you get back to the Barstool Classic. Commissioner Riggs, thank you very much for joining us, and keep up the great work.
Let's move on to some save rounds and alibis. Nicholas, we'll start with you.
I got not much. Just one thing. Just wanted to call out. There was a rogue tweet by KFC Radio today talking about a height, and I just wanted to call that out. That if anyone out there is between the 5'7", 5'4" range, come to me. I'm the expert. Don't go elsewhere. These nefarious people, these talls out there, these privileged tall people talking about height and what they think about it. You come find me, and I'm your resource there. Also, please subscribe to the YouTube. We went over 13K. We'd love to keep that number going up. And make sure that you listen to our audio. Audio is going to drop today at 8 p.m. if you're listening on Monday. And then tomorrow it will be dropping at noon on Tuesday. So thank you for listening.
And Nick, I wanted to give you a shout out as well. I saw a tweet this weekend about great hair, and I wanted to give you a shout out too.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I have decent. I'm just happy to still have it. Don't have to buy it yet, but I will be purchasing it if it does start disappearing on me.
Smart. Cons, what about you, pal?
A couple things. Number one, I finally finished, I started a while ago and I stopped and I never picked it up, but I finally finished the movie Prey last night, which is like the precursor to Predator. It's on Hulu. Very good. Very good. I recommend that to anyone. And then two things, Kate, maybe you're going to tell us about how things went at the dentist. Yes. But before we get to that, did you see the video of those Philly youths in Wawa going nuts?
It's Wawa, buddy. Okay. If you're in Wawa after midnight and you think it's not going to be crazy town, then that's on you.
That's okay, the that top and tail version of a gas station.
It's a top
friend.
And tail version of a gas station. Okay. But I did like the one woman should be in the military. Everything was going crazy around her.
Yeah.
Group she was of teens was doing calm. Like a grab and dash. It's like a flash mob of chaos in the Wawa. And the one woman just kept trying to order her sandwich. She's like, are you guys still taking orders? As like insanity was happening behind her. Cool and calm.
I feel like that's pressure. A move you would make.
Oh, 100%. I'd be like, can I still get a meatball? Can you just throw a meatball over the counter, please?
Just extra horseradish.
Yeah. So shout out.
All right. Catherine, anything for you?
That's all I got.
Side note, I didn't say so that Bonhomme Richard, that is ProPublica, Megan Rose was the author on that. And I highly recommend checking out the actual article. Like she goes super in depth. And that is why, like, I would never have known that unless somebody had dug deep like that and laid it all out for me, Barney style. So shout out to Megan Rose.
That's a job you could do. That is not a job I would ever have the patience to do. Developing something over a long period of time and having to get multiple sources and put things together in a way that's easily digestible, not something that's my strength at all.
Yeah, I respect
those types of it.
We were late to start the show because I was so in depth of her article, like clicking through it and like trying to, yeah, whatever. It was really interesting. Second, we talked about Ohio candidate J.R. Majewski last week. Mm-hmm. He had tweets like, don't make me go back to Afghanistan and kick some ass or whatever, blah, blah. And all the different ways he had inflated his military service and straight up lied, not allegedly, like the guy lied about a bunch of military service so that he could be more popular as he ran for office, I guess. He has now spoken out against those claims that are proven and saying that his deployments are classified. So he can't speak anymore on it.
It's just patently ridiculous. And everybody who's ever served like knows that. And it's not even one of those things, because there's certain things if you're an operator, there's certain things if you're a pilot, if you work in air crew, that you're going to know that everybody else in the military isn't going to know about, doesn't care about. Every single person who has ever served in the United States Armed Forces knows that when you are an E3 in the Air Force and your job is to load stuff on planes, you are not getting grabbed up to do a classified mission as a door kicker. It's just fucking not.
Great James Patterson novel, not real life. Not real life.
And I saw another dude who he's a former Navy SEAL, but now he works in like a think tank and he's an author. And he's just a very weird guy. I think overall, like a not weird in a bad way, but just a different type of cat. And he had a tweet thread about it. And I'll kind of summarize it. Where he was talking about this dude and all the issues that come along with it. And he said, you know, I think a lot of it's because we have this toxic mindset in the military that unless you are a SEAL, Ranger, Green Beret, your service doesn't matter. And he said, that's what I hate about stories like this, is that this story gives credence and you're going to see so many other military people who do have like combat action or things like that, that are going to be shit talking this guy because of the job that he did. And you're missing the forest for the enormous trees, because it's not about that. Every single person that loaded stuff on planes did the job that they were asked. There's nothing embarrassing ever about whatever job you enlisted for, whatever job you were an officer for, whatever position that you were in the military. None of it is embarrassing. And the fact that people have made this embarrassing is such a disservice to everybody who did that job and has done that job honorably since the 20 years have been going on. What his job was in the Air Force, serving in the Air Force, serving in the Space Force, Marine Corps, Air Force, Army, Navy, none of it is embarrassing. No one did a more important job than the other ones. And to make yourself put yourself in that position where you feel so badly about your service, you feel so ashamed about your lack of traditional masculinity, it makes me sad for these people that's the position that they're in, because he has nothing to feel ashamed for except for the fact that he lied and misrepresented it and did it in order to get a step up in order to be another congressman. Yeah.
And fucking who said that? Stupid. Who's this person?
I don't remember his name.
I'll have to look, because I saw it too. No, but a great tweet thread. We'll shout him out next week or something. But
and then I would put this charge to everybody else, every other veteran listening or anybody who knows a veteran, it is on us then to change that culture, to make it okay that everybody's service was awesome and no one was one more important than
whatever,
the other.
Pogue.
And you get that, right? Like, and that's the whole thing. Like, you get that kind of okay, Pogue mentality so much. And it's just like, dude, well,
I think there's like a lighthearted,
what you're supposed to do, man.
There's a lighthearted side to it, but there is a side that's very serious. And I think one, if you think you're a hardo and like a badass because you have an infantry on most or whatever, like, and you're putting other people down because they don't, I think you're equally as insecure as if you didn't do that stuff, but you're lying about it. I think there's same insecurities going through that thread there. It's like, just be proud of what you're doing, man.
Yeah. And we get in the DMs a lot. And I wish I would, like, come here, dude, like, give me a hug or come here. Let's fucking talk about this, because we'll get something like, hey, all I did was this and this. I never went here or there. And in my head, I'm like, dude, you are not in charge of where you fucking go. Like, that's the entire thing. Military, even if you did sign up and you went to BUDS, you could get put as an instructor. You could get put at some place that never really goes and does a whole lot of anything violent. And that's fucking okay. That's why I hate these stories like this, is because that guy's story by effect probably caused someone else to feel bad about their service because of what he did, the MOS connection. And that should never happen.
I had another saved round. I had to fly on over to Syria this weekend, but it's classified. I can't tell you guys what I did when I was there. Also,
maybe one day when that gets declassified.
True.
Next episode, I want to be talking about Rolling Stone just came out with a big article about drug use at Fort Bragg, including an MP selling drugs out of his cop car there.
Good
on the base.
Bad judgment to its finest.
Bad judgment. It's a pretty crazy story. The protests in Iran are still growing strong. Momentum is picking up in support worldwide. More women have been killed there, which is only stoking the fire. And somebody did this photo thing showing these beautiful, young, bright women that have been killed because they're taking off their hijabs and saying no more, as opposed to the archaic leadership there, who is clearly out of touch with the youth of their country. It's pretty crazy to watch what's going on there, but pretty brave people there. And then finally, yes, I did go to the dentist. It was terrible. I have to go back next week for fillings. I do have cavities, among other things. So don't brush too hard to compensate. If you aren't going to the dentist, you mess up your gums. That's my safety brief. And the woman had an accent and she was like, she like picked up the needle thing and she's like, we are going to do the probing now. The probing.
Oh, Russian
now.
Accent?
Yep. And I was like, oh, fuck.
I stopped going away. I stopped going to my dentist and only go to my periodontist now because the dentist had too many Russians running around who I thought were very mean.
There you go.
Got to be careful there. Also, I wanted to mention, I've been watching a lot of the Russian news, Ukraine news, and one country or one republic in Russia, that's a Russian republic, Dagestan, they are not fucking around at all when it comes to this shit. Like, because there's been words that Putin wants to conscript all of these different people there, the military age males. And anytime they have like a pop-up type of recruiting shop, these dudes just go in and burn that fucker down. They're like, it's going to be hard for you to have a recruiting office when we set this shit on fire. I kind of like that move from there. Like, we're not going. We're not doing your little stupid ass war in Ukraine. We're going to set it on fire instead. It's a good approach. I respect it.
Sound retreat. Crazy. Oh, sorry. Sound retreat.